This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it.
iRadio. Burnout is a word we hear all the time, but do we actually know what it is? Is it just feeling stressed and exhausted, or is it something more that's happening in our brains? And what if we think burnout is actually something as simple as not getting enough quality sleep? Joining me now is Liam Gilday, author and wellness speaker, to unpack the neuroscience behind burnout, explain the warning signs we shouldn't ignore, and share practical ways to protect our well-being and improve our performance through better sleep. Liam, thank you so much for joining me on iRadio's group chat. Burnout, it's a term that's used a lot nowadays, thrown around, but what actually is it from a neuroscience perspective?
So it's more than day-to-day stress. So what I would say is it's more chronic stress. So there's this brain chemical in your brain called cortisol. So a normal level of cortisol in the morning is perfectly normal, a small amount is perfectly normal. But I think the issue arises where that cortisol keeps rising during the day. That's not what's supposed to happen. And then if you have too much cortisol in your brain in the evening, then you can't switch off, then you can't sleep. I suppose with the World Health Organization, they would look at it from three points of view. They would see it as exhaustion, an indifference towards work, and then reduced professional performance. So I guess overall, it's not a state of mood, but it's a neurobiological state.
And is it fair to say then it does build up over time rather than come on suddenly? Is it usually the results of a couple of months maybe of chronic stress building up?
Yeah, it's usually, it comes slowly, and that's why, you know, you'd often hear people saying, all of a sudden it just hit me. It doesn't just happen. And, you know, a lot of the time it's higher achievers that are suspect to it. But yeah, it generally happens over a couple of months, could happen up to a year. So it's almost like depression. It doesn't build up after a week. It's going on for a couple of months, and then it hits you very hard all of a sudden.
So what's happening in the brain and the body when someone's experiencing burnout?
Well, there's two different parts of your brain. The two parts that I think would impact the most is the prefrontal cortex, which is the logical side of your brain. So that's, looks after decision-making, planning, problem-solving, stuff like that. So when you're burnt out, that part of your brain, which is almost like a CEO of a company, if you think about it, that isn't as available as it should be. So what happens then is there's another part of your brain called the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain. And that seems to take precedence over the prefrontal cortex when we're under chronic stress. So you'll find that, you know, you're going to become more irritable, and you're going to not get you won't have the motivation you had once for doing your job. And they will be the main things, but a lot of it then, you know, will knock into your sleep. So that can, I suppose, escalate the burnout too.
A lot of what you've mentioned there experienced perhaps in isolation could also be a symptom of just day-to-day stress. How can people go about figuring out whether it's a symptom of burnout or a symptom of day-to-day stress?
Well, I think with normal stress, like particularly, you know, after a weekend, you should have recovered, or particularly after a week away abroad, when you get back to work, you should feel more normal. But that would be the, I suppose, distinguishing factor, the fact that if you've had 1 or 2 weeks off and you're still feeling completely sunk or burnt out, whatever term you want to use, that would be the distinguishing factor between what's normal stress and what's actually, you know, that long-term impact of burnout.
A lot of people will say they're burnt out, but you've actually spoken about how sometimes they're actually dealing with sleep debt instead. Talk me through sleep debt and how it's different.
Well, sleep debt is like a biological own goal. So basically, if you miss a full night's sleep, you can never fully recover 100% of it. So best case scenario, so let's say if you were sleeping 4 hours a night instead of 8 hours, over time you might get 2 hours of that back. It's almost like debt. It keeps accumulating. So like studies, they've found that they've looked at people who were sleeping 6 hours a night for 2 weeks, and the overall accumulative effect was that it was the same as if you hadn't slept for a full night. Because over time it builds. But, you know, there are things you can do to look at dealing with that sleep debt. So, you know, a lot of times I think people automatically think it's burnout, where I would be looking at quality sleep first of all, you know, and then there's also that in it too, like how efficient of a sleepy are you? So generally speaking, we should be asleep 85% of the time we're in bed, but you could go to, you know, you could be in bed for 9 hours and say you're only sleeping six. So that's a 66% efficiency, which is very, very low. So it can be even more so than the quality of sleep than the quantity as well.
Should people be getting the 8 hours? Is that the recommendation? Because a lot of people get less than that. And can that hour or two difference make a big difference?
I think you should be getting 7 to 8. I think 6 hours is leaving it tight. Look, there'll always be people, you know, I think the likes of Donald Trump and that might only sleep 4 or 5 hours, or, you know, there's been in the past, there's been, who was it, Maggie Thatcher, she's only sleep 4 hours. But there'll be lingering concerns as well about not getting enough sleep, and that there does seem to be a correlation between that little sleep and getting Alzheimer's when you're older. You're not going to get perfect sleep all the time, but I think you should be aiming for 7 to 8. You know, I've had friends that survive in 4 or 5 hours, but the thing is, it can become your baseline. So, you know, you might be chronically fatigued, but because it's so normal to you, and, you know, your productivity might be 60%, but because that becomes your norm, you don't know any different. But I think long-term, like, sleep is why, you know, they talk about, like, I go into companies and talk about burnout and that, and, you know, they're looking at performance measures, but, like, the biggest performance aid that I would say is your quality of sleep, because it's just become part of modern society, where I guess, you know, a lot of people wear it as a badge of honor that they don't sleep that much, but it's very counterproductive. Like,
speaking of badge of honours, another thing we love telling people is we're flat out busy. But in this case, you're probably sacrificing sleep to get more done. Like, from a performance perspective, how is that actually counterproductive if you do look at some of the people you chat to in companies and that?
Well, you're kind of robbing performance from the next day. So a lot of people, you know, the people that are sleeping 5 or 6 hours, a lot of the time it's because they're working till 12 o'clock at night. And the problem with that is the work you're going to be doing at 10 or 11, unless you're a night owl, majority of people, the work that they're doing there, it won't be of that much substance, you know. So what I would say is it might be 60 to 70%, but then because you're finishing up at 12 or 1 o'clock at night, you know, your brain can't just switch off. Like, so if you're contributing towards really bad performance the next day, and also the work you're doing isn't of great performance. So, you know, productivity wise, it's kind of a lose-lose. You're losing on that day because it's not good quality, but you're also losing for the next day. You know, it goes without saying, you'd be better off finishing the work at 8 o'clock in the evening and starting fresh in the morning. You're not getting as far ahead as you think. And, you know, I've seen it from my own life that you think you're getting ahead of yourself doing work at 10 o'clock at night, but when you look back a couple of months later, you look back at what something you did, you're like, nah, that just wasn't up to scratch.
Yeah, it does happen from time to time that you'll have to do that, and you can tell that it really does make everything slower. You know, you're taking ages to get through something that it would normally take you no time at all. If someone wants to improve their sleep but they have a busy schedule, or even if they're parents of some very young children, I know that can wreak havoc with sleep, obviously it goes without saying, what are the biggest changes people can make that will have the greatest impact?
Well, I guess I'm going to have to exclude people with newborns, but do you know what, like, all the research is looking at it now is your consistency of sleep can be as important, if not more important, than the quality of sleep, as mad as that sounds. So we all have it's like a circadian rhythm, so it's like a body clock. So, you know, like, and you can see it in animals as well, you know, how we automatically know what time we're hungry, we automatically know when it's time to go to sleep. So, like, what I was saying is you want to be aiming for in around the same time every morning, and in around the same time every night. Now, you have a leeway of about 20 minutes, so I would say just pick a time, you know, ideally 11 to 7 or, you know, what works for you. You know, like there's some people I know go to bed at 9 or up at 5, but you just need to pick a time and stick to it. And within, you know, as much as you can, you know, we're not going to be, obviously, there's going to be weekends and stuff that you can't do. But I think the way to think about it is like, you know, like how an airport has a slot for a plane to land. And that's like your sleep. So you have a window there of once you set your normal sleep cycle, you have a window of about 20 minutes. But if you don't get into bed within that 20 minutes, you miss the slot. And like I said, I have excluded parents there were newborns. But there are things you can do, you know, like even, you know, a lot of the time people are thinking about quality sleep. They only think of the nighttime, but also in the morning time, just getting up, even just getting outside for 5 minutes, just to get that natural light into your eyes, because what that does is there's a chemical called, it's a sleepy chemical called melatonin that hits off in our brain in the evening time. But for that to function perfectly, if you can get morning light, it does make sense. And then, you know, like all the obvious things, then, you know, don't be stuck to your phone. Like I do notice that the watching TV doesn't seem to be as bad, whatever it is, with the phone. Obviously it's the light, but it's the activity and that you're doing on, you know, and I like different. I also look at phone addiction for different companies as well. And, you know, the impact of being on Instagram and trying to, between the light and the activity on the phone, and it's almost impossible. Like if you're on your phone, like a lot of us are before you go to bed, you're going to kill about 30% of your deep sleep. After that, I guess, I suppose the temperature of your room would be important. So I reckon around about 18 degrees. So I don't know if you've ever noticed that if you sleep in hotels and the rooms are very warm.
Yeah.
I personally can't sleep. And the reason why that is because when a room is way too hot, that chemical in your brain, melatonin, it shuts it down. So if it's a choice between a really cold room or a really hot room, it's a cold room every day. And then coffee, you know, try to keep it before 2. Certain people are more sensitive to, I have a bipolar disorder, so I'm quite sensitive to coffee. So for me, I don't drink it after 11, but for some people up to 2 o'clock is fine. Look, I'm always talking to people that drink caffeine before they go to bed, and you know, they say, well, it doesn't impact me. Well, it does. It's just that you haven't experienced sleep without it, and you know, you're having all these at times at night that you're waking up that you're not even aware of.
Yeah, that you're not even aware of being linked to the caffeine as well. Before I let you go, Liam, if there's someone that's just genuinely feeling constantly exhausted right now, they're not sure whether it's burnout or sleep debt or the demands of everyday life, what's a piece of advice you'd give them?
Well, like I said, now, you know, I have a bipolar background and thankfully I'm well now the last 8 years, but, you know, I'd get yourself checked out first. You know, get yourself checked out by your GP, because, you know, like burnout and mild depression can look quite similar. So if you'd fix the sleep and you go to your GP and you're sure you're not having any mood disorder, I guess then, like, you have to question what is it about this job? You know, what's causing you to be burnt out? Like, is it the fact that you're just sick of the job? Like, I used to be an accountant and I never really liked it. But I know since when I changed careers that I don't think you'll burn out to a point if you have a real passion for what you're doing. It'll make you very tired, all right. But I think if you're in the wrong environment, I think you'll burn out quickly. So, like, I would have worked in, you know, bigger multinationals and different accounting departments. And I find that, you know, when I was there, all the other people seemed to enjoy the work and I didn't. And I think that burnt me out very quickly because I was in the wrong room. So it sounds like an obvious one, but I would, like, if it's really degrading your quality of life, I'd be looking at, first of all, your sleep. Next thing, your mood, get your health checked, and then I'd look at your job. And then you need to ask yourself, is it worth it? Like, you know, like I would have had long periods of my life outside of not being able to work due to illness. So when I got myself back well, One thing I would never do is put myself back into a situation where I hate my job, because one thing that will accelerate burnout very quickly is a hatred of what you do. So I'm not saying to quit your job in the morning, but you know, there's always things you could do. There's always, you know, make a long-term plan. And a lot of the time people find that is, you know, if they make a kind of a long-term plan of trying to do something different, that feeling of burnout can lift. And also I'd look at your phone use as well. Because I think the way, you know, I talk about attention management at work, I think if you were actually to audit the amount of times you pick up your phone in the morning, I'm just wondering what's that doing to your attention. Because generally, if you keep picking up your phone, it takes about 23 minutes to regain your attention. So if you pulled your phone out of it, I'm just wondering would that help. But yeah, there's five or six things there. There's no one size fits all, but there's certainly different things that you can look at. And look, life is short. It shouldn't be this way.
I'm sure everyone can take something from that for sure. Liam, thank you so much for joining me on iRadio's group chat.
No problem at all. Thanks, William.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on iRadio.